Taking a look at your home today, talk home renovation and repair issues. We can talk energy efficiency with our two guests, Larry Mueller here and my guest Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, full-service residential remodeling company. He likes to specialize in sustainable design, historic renovation kinds of work. John Viner is Senior Project Director for Educational Programs at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Really pleased to have these guys back again to talk with us about what's going on with your house and what can we do about it. So give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. And Chad, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here, as always.
Yeah, and John, great to see you again as well.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Missed it last time around, so it's great to be back.
Great to have you back. And the Energy Center of Wisconsin, tell us what that organization is about.
So we're a nonprofit organization based in Madison that offers energy efficiency, research, and education and consultation. We develop, my primary role is developing curriculum for educational programs.
Okay.
So we also offer continuing education credits for commercial buildings and new construction as well.
So you're busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. Glenn in Waukesha has a question for you guys. Let's go to Glenn. Hi, Glenn.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I'm considering photovoltaics on my roof, and I wanted to find out if there's a place like a clearinghouse where I can get information on what the different utilities around the state pay back for the electricity that you would, you know, produce in excess of what you're using.
Mm-hmm.
There are clearinghouses for benefits, incentives for solar and energy efficiency. And that website eludes me right now, but
we'll,
I guess
we'll come up with it.
We'll come up with it.
Okay.
I think Focus on Energy here, the statewide program, can also put you in touch with the right resources. EnergyStar.gov is another website that also will probably point you in a good direction for a clearinghouse.
Okay.
Yeah. And there may be another one, and we will it'll pop into our brains. But Focus on Energy certainly would be you're going to find your information there, at least where to go to get that information. Thanks, Glenn. Larry in Madison, on to you. Hi, Larry.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about home insulation, specifically as regards a single-family frame home, probably about 35 years old. Checking in the attic, I find it has about 4 inches of blown-in insulation of some sort. I'm wondering what I should do to increase the insulation up there.
Okay. Chad, what do you think?
Yeah, well, the first thing you're going to want to do is to do some air sealing up in the attic, because while you're certainly going to want to end up with a good blanket of about R50, which, you know, could end up being about, 18 inches of loose fill insulation. If you don't do some air sealing prior to putting in that loose fill, you're still going to lose a lot of heat in all the places where air is escaping. And this is often happening on the tops of wall plates where plumbing and electrical wires go from the interior walls up into the attic to ceiling fixtures or to vent plumbing stacks. A lot of times, too, around chimneys, there will actually be a chase, which is an open cavity where you get a lot of air leakage. Now, the best way to actually diagnose this and help you either do it yourself or point you in the direction of individuals who can do it for you, I would recommend that you contact a Home Performance with Energy Star consultant through the Focus on Energy program, and they will come out and do a full house assessment and identify all of the areas where you can make improvements. And they'll take the guesswork out of it. The home performance evaluators typically will give you a written report with a thorough instruction. So if you are a do-it-yourselfer, it's still an invaluable resource that will help you to do the job right. And then once you're done with the improvement, they'll come back and do a post-test where they're doing the blower door to see what you've accomplished and to help you touch up in any areas where you may have missed. So perhaps John has something to add to that, but that's how I would approach it.
No, that's an excellent approach, and just making sure before we insulate, we just take care of all the other attic preparation work, and that's the air sealing and ventilation of the attic and bath fans. Those things all have to come first.
How would I contact the Focus on Energy program? Is that a government program?
Yes, that is a state program, statewide program. A website is focusonenergy.com if you have access to the internet.
Yeah.
That would be a really appropriate spot.
And what they do is they will, you'll find a list of people who actually do these tests, and there's, you know, across the state, and there are several in the Madison area, and you can just pick one. And the people that are listed on there are well-trained and know what they're doing, and you can rest assured that they'll do a good job for you.
Very good. One other question on this. I'm wanting to have a doorbell installed and also install wiring to the bedrooms for CO2 detectors to have them in each bedroom. Does it matter if the wiring is done prior to or after adding the additional inches of insulation?
You definitely want to do that wiring prior to doing the air sealing and insulating because, well, first off, it's going to be a lot easier, particularly if you hire an electrician to come in and do it, and that's what I would recommend. I also, and perhaps, John, you know more about this, but I mean, typically the hardwired detectors tend to be smoke detectors, and we've often recommended a plug-in digital CO2 detector, but perhaps now there are hardwired CO2 detectors. We haven't been installing them on our jobs, but...
Yeah, there certainly are combinations, smoke and carbon monoxide detectors, so we... Right. We've been referring it to as a CO2, carbon dioxide. I think right. We're talking more carbon monoxide detector, which is certainly a dangerous gas that we want to keep tabs on.
Yeah.
You could do that with a hard wire, certainly.
Okay.
Sorry about that. I did mean monoxide. What kind of blown, is there any difference in the blown-in insulation types that one would use?
Yeah, well, you've got a few options. I mean, cellulose and fiberglass are the two typical blown-in insulations that are used today. And one thing that I'll just mention is that an older type of blown-in insulation that we will commonly see, probably not in a 35-year-old home, but in a house that would be older, would be vermiculite. And that actually is very likely to have asbestos in it. And it has recently been classified basically as a hazardous material. Unless it is tested and proven not to have asbestos, then any contractor is obliged to assume that it is a asbestos-containing material and thus has to be properly removed and abated. But your house would probably just have already maybe fiberglass or cellulose up in the attic. And, you know, it's a raging debate within the building sciences world and amongst contractors as to which material is better. I personally prefer cellulose. I think that it is more tolerant of moisture, though both products, if they get wet, can clump up and become effectively diminished or if not useless in what they do. But I prefer cellulose also because it is a recycled material. You know, it's recycled newsprint primarily, and it is treated so that it is fire retardant or fire resistant. And because it's a recycled material, and it also, when you breathe in the dust from cellulose, I mean, while you don't really want to be breathing in any dust, you know, fiberglass has not been specifically determined to be a carcinogen, and yet anyone who's ever inhaled a fiberglass dust knows how irritating it is, and I certainly would not want to have to go up into that attic, as we often have to do, and deal with fiberglass. So I prefer cellulose for a variety of reasons. They're both cost competitive. There really is no significant difference in the cost.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Larry. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Carol in Caledonia next. Hi, Carol. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Our house is about 13 years old, and it was apparently built very tight because in the winter we have very high humidity, a lot of moisture problems. So we would like to do something about that this year. I'm thinking that probably some kind of an air exchanger, but I don't know enough about them to know what to ask for or who, what kind of contractor would install this.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's possible that you have a tight home, but it's also possible that you don't. We don't really know that. Moisture signs certainly are one indicator of that, but it also indicates you may just have a fair bit of sources of moisture that is allowing this moisture loading within the building. So we want to take care of where this moisture is coming from and do our best to reduce that before we simply want to ventilate. Maybe there's ways we can increase drainage around the house, or if there's groundwater issues, address those with landscaping. So first we got to address that. If the house, it's nice to have a blower door test that actually documents, lets you know, confirms so that you do or do not have a tight house. Ventilation systems certainly, once we've done our best to rid ourselves of the moisture, the excess with what we can, ventilation systems certainly are very effective. The heat recovery ventilators, a balanced ventilation system that you referred to certainly is a good way to go. A lot of situations, exhaust only with bath fans work very well and effectively. We just want to take some steps before we rush to put in a ventilation system that is a Cadillac ventilation system like a heat recovery ventilator without addressing the sources. The types of contractors that would help you with that would be a heating contractor, obviously, for the ventilation systems is the obvious choice, but helping us set those priorities and finding a building performance-related contractor. Focus on Energy does have building performance consultants in La Crosse that's near Caledonia, so that would be a source. I'd look on the Focus on Energy website and find who's in Wisconsin's closest to you. And I know maybe it'll be La Crosse, a couple great folks over there.
Okay.
I'd add just one thing to that, and that's that if you have that home performance evaluation done, which is a very much recommended, they are likely to test the flow of your fans in the house. And so your bathroom fans are often the most important fan or ventilation device in the house to take care of moisture. And if those aren't working well, that's important to identify. And so they'll not only test how tight your house is, but how well those fans are working. And that could in part be a major contributor to your current predicament. And if you were to discover that all you needed to do was put in a high efficiency, properly vented bathroom fan, that'd be a pleasant discovery.
Both of our bathroom fans are brand new though. So I'm kind of don't think it's going to
well, be depends on even brand new ones.
Yes. They're often not installed properly. So
yeah, they don't always get the flow, new or old, out of them.
Yeah. So something to consider, and good luck, Carol. Thank you very much for calling. Talking home renovation repair today with Chad Spade. Chad is owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. John Viner, Senior Project Director for the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And again, if you'd like to join in with a question about your home, its renovation or repair, or maybe an energy efficiency question, I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234. And, John, I want to go back to an earlier question there that had to do with a website. You want to...
Yeah, for a clearinghouse for incentives on a national basis, I think they'll list even state-by-state incentives and possibly utility buyback rates for photovoltaics is DZIRE. That's the letter D and SIRE.org.
Yeah, leave the E out there after the D.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So it's DS. We could even say DZIRE. We'll do it that way. Okay. DSIRE. And I just tried that, and it's right there. So there you have it. John in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Morning.
Great program. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What can we do for you?
We're thinking about living space in the basement, and I'm wondering what the cutting-edge thoughts are, reflections regarding humidity or moisture and wall insulation today. We get some conflicting advice, but very anxious to hear what you have to say.
All right. Yeah, that's always a little bit of a challenge, is to decide to live down in the cave, right? It's always a little dark and damp down there, or it can be. So, you know, first consideration is if it's wet down there or damp down there, that's really an indicator that maybe we don't want to live down there unless we know we can really address that issue and see results from a heavy rain or go through several seasons to know it's not going to get wet, because certainly problems can occur. I've insulated my foundation walls, and many people do it, certainly successful, but moisture control is the name of the game. And every site can be a little bit different, but there's certainly some basics that should be taken care of on every home. And that's obviously the gutters and the landscaping and draining, and drain that water down and out away from that house. And it may take drainage systems to the exterior or the interior of that basement foundation wall. So if we take care of the moisture, we certainly can insulate. We don't use vapor barriers or vapor retarders on the foundation wall. We keep that off. I don't suggest fiberglass down on the basement wall. We're either using a foam sheathing product to the interior, and we're covering it with a fire-rated product. Maybe it's an inch and a half to 2 inches of foam board. You can choose your color down there, and it'll work just fine as long as it stays dry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chad, anything to add there?
No, I think that's an excellent approach. Certainly when you are doing that insulating, whether you're putting up a foam board or whether you're actually applying a spray-on two-part foam, it's really important to go ahead and spray that foam up into the sill box area above the foundation wall, to both insulate the exterior rim board and also to seal up the top of that foundation really well, both from an insulation perspective and in part to reduce moisture problems. So.
Sure. All right. Thanks for calling, John.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And we'll take some more calls here. Wayne in Wisconsin Rapids up next. Wayne, hello to you.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Considering the performance lately of the asphalt shingles, I'm considering going to a metal. And
okay.
I've had aluminum salesmen and steel salesmen both give me their pitch, and I'm wondering if they've had any experience.
Chad?
We have only done steel metal roofing. We once priced a copper roof for someone, but that was a little cost prohibitive. though I think the cost of copper now is down, so it might be a real opportunity if you're so inclined. I'm not familiar with an aluminum roof. I mean, you know, aluminum is a great product for many things. We will typically specify aluminum gutters and downspouts. For a roof, I mean, the one thing, you know, aluminum is exceptionally malleable, so it will tend to bend and dent a little bit more easily. But I don't know.
Have you had good luck with the steel?
We have. Roof? We've had good luck, and it certainly, I mean, it's considered a 100-year roof because instead of tearing it off and replacing it, you would simply repaint it or recoat it if it shows any, you know, the finish is depleted in any way. So You know, it's still a roof that's going to require having something done to it during its lifespan, similar to cedar siding on a home.
Sure. But
I'm not talking about the big sheets. I'm talking about shingled type steel.
Okay, right. So the kind of the faux shingle or faux, you know, there are all sorts of options out there now that do in fact look like different types of roofing products, but it is in fact metal panels, and so that's what you're referring to?
Right.
Yeah, that we have not done that for any of our clients, and so I really
I know some contractors that have stuck with the steel and have had really good luck, but again, the aluminum, I don't either have direct experience.
All right, so we can't help you out on the aluminum side. thanks for calling though, Wayne.
Thank you,
John in Appleton. It's your turn. Hi, John.
Yes, hi. Going back to the previous caller who was concerned about moisture in the house, and I guess also about the one who was talking about finishing off the basement. I do. A fair amount of renovation work myself, and one thing I discovered recently, and I did it on three houses and was stunned at the effect, is painting the basement floor with a moisture barrier paint and then top coating that with a floor paint for durability. I mean, the walls on a newer house, the outside is probably coated to prevent a moisture from wicking through the porous concrete. But typically they wouldn't have any kind of vapor barrier under the concrete floor, especially not in an older house like mostly I deal with. But you know, some of these places were incredibly damp basements, you know, not visible water, but just damp, and it virtually disappeared after doing that. And there would be an energy efficiency effect there, too, if you're running a dehumidifier down there in the summer. Basically, the need for that disappeared.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Certainly, that concrete is—it's not always very evident, but certainly a source of that moisture. So that sealant on the floor—great idea, and glad to see it working so well.
Yeah,
yeah. The only thing I would say is, and this is something that we've had some experience with as well, is that a lot of the products that are out there, and just kind of. The physics of the vapor wanting to rise through the cement. I mean, the fact is you're putting that the vapor barrier on it, the last point where if it gets past that, the vapor will be in the home. And so what happens often is that those coatings will blister and potentially fail at points. And for a couple of the contractors that we use to refinish cement floors, which is a very, I think, effective way to deal with a basement floor so that you still maintain access to it. You're not covering it up with a carpet or some sort of panel, but it's there for the homeowner to see if there is a water leak, and you can put down area rugs. But we've been moving to actually products that allow vapor to pass through it for the simple reason that too often that sealant will fail in the first 2 to 5 years. And So it's just something to be aware of.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling, John. Appreciate your call as well. And lots more callers online. Let's go to Scott in Stoughton. Scott, hello.
Hi.
What can we do for you? Yeah, go ahead. What can we do for you?
Great, thanks. I would like to put a metal roof on my house, and I have two questions about that. We have looked into some material that's available at one of the local home centers, and not surprisingly, it's more economical than some of the other options. However, it's 28-gauge. And I understand that some of the other steel roofing materials are 24-gauge or heavier. And so my first question is that good enough? Is that thick enough? Is it sturdy enough to resist hail damage? And I know that there are hailstorms and no roof will resist, but, you know, is 28-gauge good enough? And then the other question is this roof, the attic is very well ventilated. We've got insulation in the ceiling joist, so the attic is cold. And what I want to know is, do we need to vent the space beneath the metal roof panels? In other words, the space between the existing roof deck and the underside of the metal panels. So those are my two questions.
Okay, so to clarify, the attic is an unconditioned space, correct? The insulation and the thermal envelope is the ceiling.
That's exactly right.
It's not a cathedral ceiling.
That's right. It's not a cathedral ceiling on the second floor. It's a cold attic. The thermal break is at the ceiling of the second floor.
And the roof sits on the outer edge of the exterior walls is where the roof comes down, and
that's right.
And do you have ventilated soffits at the overhang?
No, what we have is louvered vents in the end walls of the gables.
Okay.
And it's very well ventilated. When I go up there in the winter, which I did last year to install a chimney, it was breezy up there. So I feel it's a very well ventilated attic.
Yeah, and as long as when you go up there and it's great to see all that daylight and feel a breeze, that's always a great sign. As long as there's no signs of moisture staining on the underside of the roof decking or on chimneys, et cetera, it just looks in good condition, there isn't going to be a need for any more additional ventilation. Especially if while we're doing a little bit of attic work, we maybe take a look at plug in some of the holes if we have chimney chases or plumbing walls. It's always a great opportunity just to double check for a little bit of air sealing opportunities, which are going to further reduce the amount of moisture loading in the attic and help keep it dry up there.
Okay.
So attic ventilation sounds reasonable. When it comes to the 28 gauge metal roof, I don't know for sure. You know, the lighter gauge certainly isn't going to hold up as good as a heavier gauge. So we're going to get what we pay for there a little bit.
Yeah. What do you think, Chad?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. And I think it's important to use a reputable supplier. If it's a do-it-yourself project, I mean, I think it's fine to work with some of those home centers, but I think generally you want to use their higher end products. Because those bargains that they offer are things that often a reputable contractor wouldn't use. And so that's generally an indication that it's probably not something you'd want to use either. But I'm not an expert on metal roofing, so I couldn't tell you what the expected life expectancy of that particular gauge is.
So you don't...
would you recommend?
What gauge do you use, Chad?
I honestly don't know. So I'm...
I was a quote from a local roofing contractor, and they spec 24 gauge.
That would seem appropriate, but I can't tell you offhand.
Okay. So. All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Scott. Appreciate your call. And Tim in West Bend, on to you now. Hi, Tim.
Hi, I work for a insulation contractor. I had a couple thoughts on a couple earlier calls.
Okay.
One is with the guy with 4 inches of insulation in his attic, what we're doing a lot right now is we're actually going into attics, we're sucking out all the insulation, we're covering any fixtures such as can lights and so on with boxes, and we're actually spray foaming about an inch of foam, encapsulating that whole attic. Making sure it's properly vented, then coming back in and putting in like an R44 cellulose. Now you have a package. It's a great way to go. The other thing is the underfloor moisture in the basement. What we also do this, we put in radon reduction, moisture reduction systems. We vent to the sealed sump crack, and it actually takes about a half a gallon of moisture out from the under slab per hour. That's something that can be done in new construction, also something to be can be done as a retrofit, but albeit more difficult.
Yep, those are great suggestions. I don't always, when it comes to spray foaming the top of the attic, I generally like to find the holes and put the foam over the holes rather than spray foaming over the whole top side of the sheetrock or the plaster. Just because I feel with the right tools and technology, we can use that expensive product a little bit more caringly, appropriately. But certainly you're going to tackle it that way as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a high-performance approach, though, as John said, whether or not it actually gives you, significantly higher performance relative to what you have to pay to do it, because you're paying for removal of the old, a thorough air sealing of everything up there, and then the loose, material over top. The sump, we always recommend a similar approach to moisture in the basement, and we didn't discuss that earlier with that caller, but I would agree that's an excellent approach. And radon is a very real problem, particularly in south central Wisconsin, and I would highly recommend homeowners who spend time in their basements to buy a plug-in radon detector. So that you know if radon is an issue in your own home, because it's a radioactive gas that's naturally occurring in soil, and there is no way to detect it other than the unfortunate discovery that you may have lung cancer after living in a home for years with the radon problem. So,
yeah. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate your call very much. And we'll take some more calls here. Ann in Green Bay, I believe, is up next, so let's go there. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I was just wondering, we bought a house like about 40 years ago, and we remodeled it, and it's a brick home, well-built brick home. But the carpenter said we didn't have to have insulation because of the brick. And now we're finding out that we should have insulated it. So what can we do now?
Yeah, so how old is the house?
The house is about probably 80 years old.
80 years old. So there's...
The brick is very good on it, and when they tore the plaster off, it had, like, slats, you know, what they put in years ago for insulation, I guess.
Yeah, how deep is those slats to the inside once you remove the plaster? How much space do you have before you touch the brick there?
I can't remember.
Sometimes... Sometimes it's just simply an inch or so, and it isn't a lot of room to add additional insulation.
That's what I was wondering. Do you think we'd be just good enough to insulate the attics, probably? Or wouldn't that help?
Well, one option, potentially. So right now, is the plaster all removed on the inside, or you just moved part of it?
We removed it all and put all new plaster because it was all cracked. And okay. It was falling off, so we removed it all, and we wanted to insulate it. And the carpenter said, no, that the brick would be okay. That would be your insulation. And we're finding out now, well, quite mm-hmm. a few years already now, that the walls will get really cold.
So there may be opportunities. I'm assuming that the wiring is upgraded, and we don't have knob and tube wiring in older style that we want to make sure is... up to snuff before we would insulate. But there is an injection foam that they can spray in after the fact that fills the voids, and they can do this in what we're going to call a closed cavity, which you have right now behind that new plaster is a small cavity that they can drill small holes from the inside or even through the brick. They've done that, depending on if it's simply a one-layer brick. Sometimes there's two layers of brick on older houses.
Mm-hmm.
But I would look up injection foam, or you could Google injection foam, and you could probably find some dealers that would be able to come to your area and give you a quote. So that's going to be an option for you.
Okay.
And
insulated, but we just took his word for it, you know. Mm-hmm.
Can you see when the plaster was down, you couldn't see the brick, could you? From the inside?
Yeah, and the slats, there were like little slats that would go, well, I don't know, maybe they were like an inch. And they had that, you know, years ago, I guess they put cement in between the slats.
Right.
That's how it was. That's how they insulated it.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't know if that foam would work with, because I know when we ripped off the old plaster, there was a lot of cement that was falling out from the wood, you know.
Right. Well, you know, the only other thing that I would say you have to be careful about is that the brick as an exterior, kind of siding on the house, a lot of moisture does still go through that brick. And if you were to inject foam into the cavity directly behind the brick, and then the moisture, you know, you're not going to be able to control that and know that you have a perfect coating. and that you fill up all that space, and moisture is going to pass through the brick in a driving rain. The brick and the mortar will become saturated, and water will literally be pouring down the backside of the wall. And so that's why it's so critically important with any exterior treatment on a home, whether it's vinyl siding, cedar siding, cement siding, or stone or brick, there has to be a good, what we call a rain plane, that is on the exterior side of the framed wall, but behind whatever your exterior coating is. And so, you know, it definitely gets into something a little tricky if you have a minimally framed wall and you're looking to inject foam into that. I mean, I would just say that you will want a professional to look at it. And certainly injection foam is something that will be done by an insulation professional, but there are some building science details that with respect to the moisture that, you know, will need to be considered. So
okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Ann. Appreciate it. Amy in Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about a high-efficiency air conditioning system.
Okay.
Our house is about 80 years old, and, of course, it had no vents, so we couldn't put a traditional air conditioning central air system into the home. So we have the high-efficiency system with, excuse me, the small tubings that they put it down through closets, and we have the vents are in the ceiling. However, we have three floors in our house. The third floor is a full walk-up attic, and that's where the heat exchanger is. And our plan someday is to refinish that third floor to make it a living space. So we had them put in some vents for this system up on the third floor. Now, as of right now, we do not go up there. We don't do anything in that area, and there is currently no insulation between the roof and the attic. That whole third floor is not insulated because we just had a metal roof put on. And my husband thinks that we should leave that air conditioning running on the third floor because he thinks it helps cool the entire house down by having that cool up there. And I thought we should cap those off and not cool that third floor so that we wouldn't be using as much energy. And I'm kind of curious, well, not really who's right, but which way we should be going with this, because I'm feeling that next summer we're going to be in the same predicament if we don't get the insulation in over the winter.
Yeah, and your predicament is, excuse me, just discomfort in the house, or is the rest of the house being cooled adequately right now?
Yes.
So comfort's not an issue. We're just looking at possible dollar savings as a way to increase performance of that unit.
Correct.
I personally would just cap off those terminations as long as I would probably consult with the heating contractor that put it in to make sure capping it off does not restrict airflow. That's a requirement through there on those high-velocity systems. I personally don't know how tolerant they are of being off related to the specifications of airflow that is required. So capping off may put the unit out of balance, per se.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that for sure, so that would be a consultation with your heating contractor to know whether that's even a good thing to do. If he suggests, yes, we're not going to hurt the function of those units, of that high-velocity air conditioner, then I would go ahead and cap those off and not worry about cooling that walk-up attic that I'm sure is pretty ventilated right now, and we've got a lot of air movement through there. I don't think it's going to be keeping that attic temperature a whole lot cooler to make an impact.
Okay.
All right. There you have it. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Someone wondered, what is the formula for mortar for a basement foundation? And I'm not sure if we have enough information there to answer that question. I'm not sure.
I would have to consult with our mason. There's a particular type of mortar that's used with sandstone, and I'm forgetting if that's what you've got. And I'm forgetting what the letter is that's
required.
It's on
okay.
the bag.
Jim and Madison, we're on to you. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I have an uninsulated two-car detached garage, and I'm insulating the interior of the garage with some with craft-faced insulation and some with not. And I'm doing it with Habitat Restore leftovers or whatever I can find to do that. And the question is whether, two questions. One is whether I need to worry about a vapor barrier on the walls of this unheated garage for either the ceiling or the walls. And the second is when I have finished look where I want to put sheetrock on, is moisture a concern there? Someone has suggested using yellow foam board on the walls and the ceiling because it's light and easy to handle, and I don't even know what it is, but those are my two questions.
So the garage is unheated.
Correct.
So there's no heating source inside there. We're just trying to build a little bit of a barrier between inside and outside.
That's correct. When it's 20 below outside, it's hopefully will be zero inside, and so when I get in the truck, it's easy to get into.
Right. So do you have any particular hobbies in the garage, or were just using
yes.
the car for or the garage for car storage, or do we have something?
I do work out of the garage at times and wear 9 sweaters, which upsets my wife when I go out there with all these old sweaters on. So that's why I'd like to get some insulation in there.
Are the hobbies and things you're doing out there producing a lot of moisture?
Like, no, not at all.
Then I wouldn't be too concerned about it. We're not going to have it's a detached garage. We're not going to have a lot of moisture production out in that garage. We're not heating it with any type of space heater where we're not pumping moisture through these heating systems.
So if I do add heat, is that a concern, like a space heater, just a room heater to heat it up while I'm out there? Is that a
concern?
No,
you're not going to have a problem. I wouldn't be concerned with a vapor barrier. More just be concerned with air tightness when you put the sheetrock back up. Maybe we're just using a little bit of caulking at all the seams, the tops and bottoms. Let's just make it as airtight as we can as you reassemble it, and don't worry about putting up poly.
Okay, and then the yellow foam board, is that something you're familiar with, or foam board in general?
Foam board in general, certainly you could go to the inside, but I guess personally if I wasn't really using the space to the point where it's costing me a lot of money to heat it, and we're just using a space heater on occasion when we might need it a few times in the right. winter, I probably wouldn't invest in any additional insulation. I think that certainly you could, and it would maybe help a little bit, but we're not going to have a huge temperature difference between inside and outside okay. where this R value is going to have a great impact.
Okay. Right. And thanks very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Chad Spade and John Viner, our guests here as we talk home renovation and repair on the Ideas Network. We have an answer to the question about the basement, the mortar mix for a basement, and someone called in and said the mortar mix recipe, it's a type M mortar, and so M is in Mary, and it's 3 parts of sand to 1 part of mortar mix. That sounds, I think that sounds good to our guests here. So that's where that's what you got, type M, 3 parts sand to 1 part mortar mix. Let's go to Patricia in Wauwatosa. Hi, Patricia.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Nice topic. I have 2 separate questions. The first one is I just purchased an air purifier called an Ionic Pro, and it seems to me that I remember reading something a while back that negative ion machines are not the healthiest thing to use inside, and wondered if you knew anything about that or what would be the best kind of air purifier and if they are even worthwhile the money. Spending the money.
It's been a while since I thought about air purifiers, but you're right. The ionic, the purifiers. I have a lot of customers that have been in houses that have these. Really, do give some positive feedback as far as taking the dust out of the air or odors out of the air. The concern is always ozone as a production. O3. Some marketing efforts have called it energized oxygen. But it is an unregulated fuel. It is ozone. It is can be considered a pollutant. And it's unregulated. So we don't know how much these units put into the house or often what is even a safe standard for residential buildings. So a lot of this is unproven and undocumented primarily. The research hasn't necessarily been out there that I have seen. So generally the recommendation is to stay away from them because they are unregulated. At the same time, I have customers that really feel that it has done some benefit to them and in the household.
What do you think, Chad?
Well, I suffer from dust mite allergies, and so I like to have HEPA air filters in parts of my home, and I tend to use them wherever I'm spending most of my time selectively. And I think that's a nice way to help take particulate matter out of the air. And of course, every now and then you have to clean the filters or replace the filters. But that's what I would recommend. And I would agree with John. Everything I've ever read about the ionization process leads me to think it's something we might not want to fool around with, particularly in a newer, tighter, more energy efficient home where any sort of unknown pollutant or just substance is going to have an amplified effect, though certainly we do want to have good air exchange in any home, so that will hopefully mitigate that slightly. But I would say filtering the air is more important than that sort of technology.
Okay, that really helps me. Now, what kind of a air purifier would you use, though? You said just you use air filters.
It's really just a filter. It's taking particulate matter out of the air, dust, dead skin. I mean, all the things that are just part of a home that's occupied. And of course, another way to minimize dust in a home is to not have a lot of carpeting in it. You know, to have hardwood floors and tile and stone. That's another strategy for dealing with reducing particulates because carpet fibers trap a lot of particulate matter. And every time you, walk on a carpet, you stir that up.
So, Chad, you have either freestanding HEPA filtration then? You can move it around from room
to
room?
That's correct.
Versus a whole house, one connected to a forced air furnace.
Right. Well, and I do have one connected to my furnace, and that's primarily what, and that's a filter that we replace a few times a year. And, we have a high efficiency filter. It's not the, not one of the thin, like 1-inch thick models. It's, I think it's a Space Guard. But it's recommended that they be replaced every 3 to 6 months, and so that's what we do. And we do that for many clients. And then the little portable units, the ones that I've owned over the years have been Honeywell units, but there are many brands out there, and you can pick them up at the big box stores,
Sure.
So.
Okay, so what you're getting at is that I should buy an air purifier that has a filter in it and forget the ozone, the ionic. I is that correct?
Well, that would be my recommendation, but I'm not an expert on this, and I just have a, from my own allergies, I can say that that's an effective way for me to deal with that particular problem, but...
Are you trying to solve odor problems or just dust issues?
Allergy. I had a severe allergic reaction 6 months ago to having my carpet removed, and it still hasn't gone away. And I've been trying all kinds of things to correct the problem, and there's no carpeting anywhere in my house anymore. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really, figured out what kind of a purification system I can use that would maybe, whatever happened is something that's airborne and it still is in existence in my home, even though the windows are always open. But, and that's where I'm kind of stumped as to what,
Yeah, has the ion purifier, has that helped you then? Has it made an impact?
I've only used it a couple of times, and then I remembered about the ozone thing, about the negative part of it, as maybe not so healthy to use. And so you're the first one that really made it clear as to why it may be not as safe.
Yeah.
So I will. Okay. Well, I won't keep you. I thank you so much for your answers.
Sure. Thanks a lot for calling. An email from Ann from Madison who says, my home is quite well insulated. a couple of years ago, I had a blower door test and added blown-in cellulose. Early mornings in summer, it tends to be similar temperature to the outdoors, but it never warms up during the day. Consequently, it's several degrees cooler inside the throughout the day, which is often too cool for me. I mostly have casement windows, which don't lend well for inward airflow. The only time it warms up much inside is when it's humid outside, too, and the humidity comes in, and that's not comfortable either. How can I get dry, warm air into the house in the summer?
Yeah, so we're talking about a summer cooling concern here, where it's actually too cool, so we don't often come into that. So it's looking at if we need to bring in a little bit more solar radiation. Obviously, windows are the part of the building envelope that allows that sun to come in, and maybe we just don't have that opportunity here, it sounds like. And maybe it's in the evenings, it's opening windows or doors, allowing a little bit of heat to come in. Let's see, I gotta think through this, because it's the opposite of what we normally would come across.
Well, maybe a whole house fan strategy, which would just help create a little bit more ventilation. And you still are going to be wanting to use that in a strategic way. A whole house fan is best used to bring in the fresh air when it is nice outside.
That's one answer. We'll have more for you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking energy efficiency, home renovation, and repair issues with Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry of Madison, John Viner, Senior Project Manager for Educational Programs at the Energy Center of Wisconsin, our guests today. And Chad, I know there are some events coming up that we should probably let our listeners know about.
Yes, that's right. First off, in Milwaukee, coming up the weekend of September 18th through the 20th, the NARI chapter in Milwaukee is sponsoring its Fall Expo, which will be out at the fairgrounds. It's a great opportunity to meet a lot of contractors and specialists in home renovation and repair, and, of course, to learn about a lot of products. Coming up in the Madison area, we have the Green Event, which is co-sponsored by NARI and MABA on October 4th, which is a Sunday from 1 to 5, and that's at the Monona Grove High School. And then the following Sunday on October 4th is the Fall Tour of Remodeled Homes, again sponsored by NARI. That's from 9:30 to 4:30. There are 12 sites this year throughout the Madison area. And for information on all of the Madison events, you can go to remodelingmadison.org, which is the NARI website, to find out more. And I don't know the website for NARI of Milwaukee, but I'm sure if you Google it, you can find it.
Yeah, it's MilwaukeeNARI.org.
Okay.
So that's the site for that. All right, lots of callers online to visit with you guys. So let's turn to Lisa in Madison next, who's been waiting. Lisa, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. In my basement, where the plumbing goes up to the floor, they used foam insulation. There's also cable line and phone lines going through that. I'm just wondering, other than chiseling away with a knife, is that the only way to get it removed?
Yeah, I think that's just going to be the best option. If we want to do some repair changes to that plumbing or wiring, unfortunately, somebody put that foam around there.
Yeah, and I'm afraid of cutting the wires because you don't know what's going where.
Right.
Especially it being a dark hole.
Yeah. Yep. I think we're just going to have to do a little surgical procedure there with a dull knife.
Nothing dissolves it, huh?
No, I think we're going to just deal with more things that are pretty toxic to address that I certainly wouldn't recommend going there. We would just simply try to chisel it out with care. I think you can do that without too much effort, without prying too hard to pop a wire.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Ellen in Wausau. Hello.
Hello. I had a question concerning our basement. Our house is a solid brick house. It's about 100 years old. The basement walls are stone and mortar, and it's mostly underground. I would say it's a submerged basement except for a small part. We had an energy audit done, and he recommended that we have those walls, spray insulation applied to the inside walls of the basement. We had two concerns. We had always been told that those walls shouldn't be covered up, that they needed to breathe to prevent deterioration of the mortar. And secondly, what would we really gain from it, because it's not a heated basement anyway?
Yeah, if that was the question, what you might be using the basement for. If it's a breezy, drafty, damp basement down there with an old stone foundation and you don't have any intention of using it in as a conditioned space, certainly there are times where applying the air sealing efforts to the floor system can make sense. Is there a heating system with ductwork located in the basement?
We have the furnaces in the basement. There is just the ductwork comes through it. There is a small vent that can open. But we basically really don't heat it. We use it for storage. Our laundry is down there, but it gets cold, but not that cold because it's an in-ground basement. You know what I mean? It's not high in the air.
Yeah, without seeing it, it might be best to put, I'm not sure the other recommendations that the consultant may have had. So the foundation wall might not be a priority, and there's other options for you, whether it's addressing attic insulation and other things that might be on the list. But in this case, if it's a cold basement, you don't have that vent open, you're not too concerned about keeping it warm, putting resources into the duct system where we would make sure the duct system is airtight and insulated very well so that we're starting to limit the amount of heat that goes into the basement and try to get it more to the conditioned floor areas. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So we can spray foam on the foundation wall. There are cases in these old basements that aren't ever going to be used, and we want to keep them dry. And it's been there 100 years, and it'll be there another 100 years if you don't make any significant changes.
Well, I guess our concern was that I don't know whether reading or some contractor had told us that that type of mortar and wall system should never be covered over, that it needs to breathe, that you can cause more deterioration in the mortar by covering it up. Do you know anything about that?
I know that we've gone both ways on this, and people have made it work just fine. Whether there's a particular mortar that I'm missing, I'm not a cement or a mason expert.
It's a fairly soft mortar.
Yeah, and I think that I'm leaning in this case, just from listening to the situation, that we might not want to address that and leave it as is, and certainly move other things up on the list of priority.
Okay, so there has been repair work done on the one wall that's partially exposed, and that has concrete block. Would that make sense to cover that with insulation because that's exposed to the air on the outside?
Certainly adding an additional R value there can be beneficial. I would certainly take a look at the duct distribution system first and foremost to make sure that that's as effective, as efficient as possible first.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Ellen. Appreciate your call as well. Let's turn to Vicki in Spring Green. Vicki, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Good. My ceilings are sagging. Several years ago, we put more insulation up in our attic, and it's really quite thick now. And over the years since then, the drywall in between where it's nailed to the joists and stuff is sagging, and I don't know if I have a moisture problem in my attic and the moisture's coming down through the insulation and getting in the drywall, or if I have a moisture problem inside where maybe I need better air circulation and the moisture's getting up into the drywall from there, but I haven't been able to find anybody who's been able to tell me why my ceilings are sagging.
Chad?
Well, that's an interesting problem. It's not completely unheard of. It could be that just the way the ceiling material was attached to the ceiling joist, that the weight of the insulation material is causing this problem. It is a more likely explanation that there is some moisture getting absorbed in that insulating material, which would make it considerably heavier and would further exacerbate the problem. Without inspecting it, it would be hard to know exactly what is going on there. But those are all possible explanations. You know, of course, when the house was built and when it was under-insulated, it wasn't a problem because you didn't have that weight load up there.
That's right.
But there could be other things. You don't see any signs of actual water leaks, do you?
The only places that there were several years ago when we had some really bad storms, way over on the west wall, there's a little bit, and that's never gotten any bigger. My husband was a roofer, and he re-roofed the house several years ago. And before he re-roofed the house, there was some leakage by the chimney flashing. Mm-hmm. And those are the only places that we've ever seen any, and that hasn't, you know, since he put the new roof on, we haven't had any problems with that. I don't want my ceiling to fall in on me someday.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, one thing to look at is to in fact confirm that the drywall or plasterboard is pulling away from the framing. I mean, if that's not happening, then it could be that the framing material itself is overloaded, stressed. Possibly there's some cracking there. That would be, I mean, both are cause for concern, but that would be I would have more concern about a structural failure than I would about a little bit of pulling away of the drywall. So that might be worth looking into.
Okay.
The other two, there are two places, too, and I don't know if this is from the stress on this drywall or if when they put all the added insulation in, they step through, but there's two places that look like it's kind of cracking, just like there's excess weight been put there at some point, and I watch those really closely to make sure they're not getting any worse, and they don't seem to be getting any worse, but if it's from the weight of the insulation, I want to do something about it, like I said, before it caves in on me.
Yeah. Finding whether it's the sheetrock pulling away or there's truss movement or roof rafter movement that is causing the problem.
Yeah, you're going to have to get somebody in and take a look.
Okay, great. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. What are your thoughts? Here's an email from Lisa in La Crosse. What are your thoughts on using the blower on a heating and cooling unit all the time? We have two levels and a thermostat only on one of those levels. I want to keep both floors at similar temperatures, but my husband doesn't like the idea of keeping the blower on all the time. Actually, we keep the blower on all the time at our house.
Yeah, so some do. It certainly costs you money to do so, right? So it may, running that furnace fan 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, might cost maybe $250, $300 a year. So there's an expense there. The homeowner is going to have to decide, is the comfort benefit there? Do you run it with the fan on, with the fan off? And are you noticing a significant difference to justify that cost? That's really what it's going to come down to, and is comfort.
And one thing that we could add is that if you happen to have a high-efficiency furnace with a direct current motor or blower, that is a much less expensive fan to operate. So if you're in a position where you either have that or you're upgrading your furnace and you would like to run the fan all the time, that's definitely an investment worth making because it will cost about a tenth of what John just stated to run that fan if it's a DC motor.
Yeah, it doesn't cost us $250 a year. I know that for a fact. I couldn't tell the difference in the electric bill, as a matter of fact, when we started doing it.
Yeah,
so.
Well, that's great. Big difference with that efficient fan motor.
Well, let's go to Linda and De Pere. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Annette. I actually have two questions. Our house is probably about 25 years old. It's a tri-level home with an attached garage, and up in the attic that we access from the garage only, they never put a firewall in. and we've been told that there should be one, you know, basically between the garage part of the house and the house part.
Yeah.
And we're wondering whether that would help with heating and also being a tri-level, and that although our furnace was replaced probably 10 or 11 years ago, so it wasn't an Energy Star or anything, but it was a good one at the time. The lower level is never comfortable, and that there's a bedroom and a family room down there. And, you know, it's nice and warm down in our basement. You go to that level and you, you know, need a sweatshirt on, and you go upstairs, and those two levels are fine.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you've got a couple of different issues potentially. I would say that, you know, the firewall issue, if I'm understanding that correctly, I mean, it's definitely something that's worth doing, and it's not very complicated or expensive to put in the proper firewall from the garage to cover up the attic access and that wall that is attached to the home. But probably some balancing of the furnace ductwork is what is needed to improve the situation with the lower level. And it could be a design issue. Either a home performance contractor or, a quality heating contractor look at that would help you kind of troubleshoot it. There also could be air sealing and insulating opportunities that or details that need attention on the one level that's less comfortable.
Yeah, no energy savings for that firewall, and a home performance consultant going through his analysis with the blower door to identify that air sealing and insulating is going to be key, and then whether there is anything we can do with the ducts, that'll be next. Hard to identify from here, and that analysis really lays it on the line for us.
Okay, so just work through one of the companies.
Yeah, through Focus on Energy, a building performance consultant. You can certainly find a list of those available on online, and that's going to be a great starting point.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Kay emailed us from Waterford and was listening to our program, and the questions about air cleaners and filters. She said there's an excellent information place on household air cleaning devices at EPA IAQ. That website is kind of a long website, but if you put in, it's an Environmental Protection Agency, EPA IAQ, you're going to find it. And that gives a lot of good information. And the ionizers and the ozone generators are not recommended.
No.
Ozone can be very harmful at very low levels. And for people with existing respiratory problems, they can aggravate their conditions. So just something from another emailer. And Bill in Sheboygan has a question or comment. Hi, Bill.
How you doing? Great show.
Thanks.
I recently, about 18 months ago, we had brand new carpet installed throughout the house. Three different manufacturers. We had 120 yards of it put on the first level. And about 9 months after the installation, I noticed a wrinkle near a wall on the 120-yard stuff. I looked in the other two bedrooms, at the other two manufacturers, which are in two different rooms, and those didn't have any wrinkles. As time went on, more wrinkles developed. Here we are, about 15 months. I had hired a carpet inspector to come out and do an inspection. Basically, what he told me is that the carpet has come loose to some degree from the tack strip, and that it was an installation-related problem. I think it's a manufacturing-related problem. My friend installed this carpet for me. He's been doing it for 25 years. This inspector asked me some questions if I was present, and I was during the installation. And he asked if he used a thing called a knee kicker, and he explained what it was, how it worked, and my friend did use that for the whole installation. And he asked about having used something called a power stretcher. And he described that, and I don't remember seeing that tool at all. I still think it's a manufacturer, but this, he seems to think that because he didn't use this thing called a power stretcher, he didn't stretch it as tight as it should have been, and now it's coming loose, and he needs to do a restretch on it. What do you guys think? I'll listen to your answer off the air.
All right. Chad, what
do
you think?
Well, yeah, I would take two approaches. I think that I would try to have that reinstalled to see if that won't solve the problem. Certainly, I think that's probably the easiest thing. But before you do that, I would document with some digital photos what's going on. And I would contact the place that you purchased the carpet from and see if, you know, they are willing to come out and look at it, or if a representative from the manufacturer is willing to come and look at it. Perhaps you can just send them some photos of what's going on. I wasn't clear on whether or not, perhaps you said this in your question that you had already done that, but I would say that it probably can be resolved with the installation, but you want to know or document what's going on so that if you determine it is the product, that probably there's some sort of warranty.
Yep. There you have it. Thank you. Deb in Milwaukee. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. There's a, this is a Lanestone Cape Cod, and there's a Carrier household air conditioner, Central Air, and it was left uncovered, and I asked the homeowner why, and he said that he was instructed to do this, and I said, that's ridiculous, and he said it was like a professional that did it, told him to do this, and then came time to use the air conditioner, it didn't work. So I was reading downstairs on a list of things that you, that are, like, you know, required for it to work properly, and I cleaned out the electronic air filters, and I wondered if what you think of this. I mean, this leaving the air conditioning unit outside uncovered.
Yeah, so the condenser outside, it's left uncovered most of the time, so not too many people are covering it. It's designed to be outside and be in the elements, and it can be, if we get a lot of leaves or debris on there, they can be gently hosed off from the outside to clean it off. The elements are not going to affect whether that unit is going to work or not if you let that unit sit out in the winter.
Well, it says it here on that if it has, let me see, it's outside unit not on check, circuit breaker, blah, 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 blah. And then there is, if it's high efficiency, it says keep snow away from PVC termination pipes, high efficiency units only.
Yeah, I think you're mixing up that's with the furnace, the PVC pipes. That's related to the heating unit, the furnace, and not the air conditioner.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure. There's no heat, no cool, and general maintenance. That was under general maintenance, so I wasn't sure if that went, which one that went to. But anyway, so it's just brush it away with what, did you say?
Well, if we would have being careful, having a hose with not a heavy stream, it's just a light sprinkle coming out of a hose. You can rinse any leaf debris away from the coil on that outdoor unit.
Okay.
We just want to be careful with that. If it's all matted with dust and debris, that's a concern. If there's a little bit of leaves and dust and debris or cottonwood, it's not going to affect that unit in a large way.
Okay.
And I would also add that that unit needs to have good ventilation. I mean, you can't, enclose that condenser unit or it's not going to function properly.
Yep. So you want to keep it open. Ours, I've never had a cover on ours either. I rarely see them. The National Trust for Historic Preservation here at the end of the show here, I want to mention, has they've launched a weatherization guide for older and historic buildings. So it's for how to repair your old windows, for those windows. And Chad, you've had a lot of experience with this yourself. But actually at the National Trust for Historic Preservation, there's information on, it's called Weatherization Guide for Older and Historic Buildings. So something else to consider. Guys, thanks.
Hey,
Been a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, full-service residential company, specializes in sustainable design and historic renovations. And website, chadscarpentry.com. John Viner, senior project manager for educational programs at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. And for that, you can go to ecw.org, ecw.org, find out some more about his organization. Thank you very much for listening. Bruce Allison comes on tomorrow to talk with us about trees and shrubs on the Ideas Net.